All right, so everybody can hear me? Very well. My name is Boris. I'm part of the Anarchist Black Cross Belarus, and I will be talking about tractors, rockets, and the internet, and I have very short time, so you will see very few things of those. One thing, we are in the Zol G, because I didn't want to be in Zol Z, as it's kind of like ideologically doesn't pass for people in the Eastern Europe. Yeah, we will have like a short question answer section in the end. What the fuck is ABC Belarus? Many of you don't know. We are like an activist anarchist collective that supports for the last 15 years people who ended up in prison fighting dictatorship in the country. Since our existence, beginning of our existence, we never had any people we never had a situation where we never had people in the prison. So people are constantly in prison in Belarus in the last 15 years fighting the dictatorship. We do solidarity work also with those who are around the people who are in prisons, so their families and so on. We also promote, we were promoting, we don't have so much time left anymore, but before building up a security culture, so for the activists to know how to go around the new mechanisms of a dictatorship to suppress the population. We do collect a little bit of data from like the courts, so we see what the government is using, for example, to crack the laptops. We see all this shit coming up in the documents from time to time. And this is not a talk about our group, so you can check out our website and see what is it about. So, tractors. Here they are. They don't always look like that. Sometimes they look like that. Tractors are one of the important parts of like for you to imagine how Belarusian industry looks like. So after collapse of the Soviet Union, Belarus was and remained like a zone of heavy and light industry, production of tractors, but also we had industry that was connected with war or militarism of the Soviet Union, right? So there are factories that are producing small chips for the rockets and shit like that, and this continues. So partly Russian war industry depends on Belarus in production of the rockets. The situation where, you know, Russian rockets hit wrong target in Ukraine also connected with the fact that Belarusian workers are stealing precious metals from the factories. So like those produced chips are working like shit. And we do have it, but it's not like Taiwan or something like that. It's more like, imagine Soviet Union, post-Soviet Union country, that people are doing like some outdated technologies. So those are like the topic about the rockets. Belarus is participating in the war efforts of Russia right now, and it was participating for very long in build up to the war. So helping producing enough rockets and enough of the you know, like flying shit that goes to Ukraine right now. However, after collapse of the Soviet Union, Belarus became also very dependent, and it was dependent and became dependent on Russian resources. So oil, gas, and all this shit comes mostly from Russia, economically dependent on Russia, and thus politically dependent as well. Talking about Lukashenko, so Belarus is a dictatorship that ruled by this guy. Next year is 30 years anniversary. Lukashenko and technologies, he's a very special character. You can do like lectures in universities about his personality. I will do like a couple of quotes about how he perceives technologies and how he sees himself in the technological world. For example, we do not need an imported system for falsifying elections. We will create our own, one run by the state. And that's connected with this notion that for, you know, successful dictatorship, not always you need some outsourced things. You can, you know, produce a dictatorship in the country yourself. So a lot of things that are happening in Belarus are like home-based or homemade shit. As a child, I was growing among animals and plants, so he's very close to the nature, he thinks. It also shows his like attitude to technologies. And the last part is, I even don't have a mobile phone. I'm looking at other presidents and see how they're preoccupied with their iPhones. I'm not doing that. I know what security is. And even more, I have enough people who can do that for me. And that's an important factor. Lukashenko knows how to drive a tractor. He doesn't know how to operate iPhone, most probably. But he has this mentality that understands, okay, I need enough smart people around me who will help me to go through the modern world. And that's what he's doing a lot. So he has quite a huge, let's say, cabinet of people who are helping him out to figure out the modern world in the different directions, politically, technologically wise, economically. Although Belarus is a dictatorship, it is a country that was for many years a partner of the European Union. It changed recently. before 2020 protests, before the uprising of 2020, European Union was cooperating with Belarus on the border security, what they're doing also in Turkey and many other authoritarian regimes. So for European politicians to protect the borders, build up offenses, it's fine to have like a bloody dictator that is ready to kill people. So that's what the European Union was doing, and that involved also the transaction of technologies. So for example, you go to the Belarusian border and you get in controlled and you have this huge X-ray machine that is going to X-ray your car or whatever shit you have, and it's written like there is a plate that says like this machine is financed by the European Union, and you think like, wow, thank you European Union, you're like really helping democracy in Belarus. So European Union was also investing a lot in the infrastructure projects inside of the country, roads and shit like that. This was connected also because Belarus is a transit country, so you need a lot of transit between Russia and Europe. Not anymore, but before it was the case, right? Everybody wanted to trade with Russia. A lot still do. Also, some countries inside of the European Union were supporting police efforts in Belarus. There was a huge scandal in Germany that German cops were bringing Belarusian riot cops to evictions of, or like protection of Gorleben transport, like the nuclear waste transport back in the days. So they wouldn't have like Belarusian cops hitting you, you know, but they would have them like just sitting next to you and watching how the German cops are working. And that's where, for example, Belarusian cops learned to film everything at the demonstrations or at some events. So they're also running with these cameras and filming, and then post factum might apply repressions to the people who were participating in the protests. And some of the cameras were donated generously by the German state to the Belarusian cops. And there are many more other money flows, like ecological, technological also, private, public, everything goes in Belarus. Dictatorship, yes, but I mean money, you know, that cross the border easily. Very simple technologies to fight the population. Water cannons were brought from Canada, so we had this fancy water, Canadian water cannons. I will show you how Belarusian people hacked those during the protests, very easy. Camera usage for documentation, as I was mentioning, cops running around with cameras all the time. This is the, what they learned from the German cops. There were like new technologies that were like mobile car shields, so they bring it up to block the whole street. Russians have like bigger machines, Belarusians have smaller machines, but in general the idea is that you have this kind of like a truck that brings a huge shield and you block the whole street so protesters cannot go through it. And crowd control equipment from other countries, like we had tear gas from Czech and stun grenades from Czech and Israelis and so on. So like everybody were delivering and providing weapons to Belarus as if it's like, sure, you know, we know that you're doing some shit there, but have it for you. But there are some other funny, you know, like hacking from Belarusian state. So for example, here, like during the protests, people were putting flags, like white, red, white flags, which were the protest flags. Fuck, I have to put the sound in. 1 second. But it's not really important what people were laughing about him. So, this is one of the hack that this is, I think, somebody connected with the Belarusian state who was trying to remove the flag. Then we have like this systems of notification in the city that were used to play like a patriotic music during the protests, which Belarusian state was doing, trying to like, you know, demoralize the protesters. Looks fucking bizarre and crazy. And that was the hacking part of the Canadian water cannon. Belarusian people are very creative. You can see you love hacking. We all love hacking. That's how you hack the water cannon. Later on, they stopped using them because this is what happened to them when you hack them. Yeah. They were very open for hacking, like nothing is closed, you can just open and take it away. Internet in Belarus, right? So this is a separate topic. We are the country of the post-Soviet, so we didn't have internet for very long. I think like the general consumers market for the internet opened like beginning of 2000s, maybe middle of 2000s. I got my internet connection first 2004, 2005. So internet is kind of like a thing that was developing very slowly, but then it exploded. One of the things was, for example, internet like online infrastructure was used for the protests in 2005, 2000. 5, wrong date, of the elections. So we had like a protest camp on the streets, and people set up an indie media information point, which was broadcasting updates online live, you know. And this was one of the first situations in Belarus where the website started getting blocked. So Belarusian indie media was the first attempt of Belarusian state to fight certain content on the internet. There was like mirrors, there was a lot of solidarity also from outside. So this worked pretty well for the protesters, didn't work so well for the government. The protest was smashed, but for a lot of people, the opportunity of organizing through the internet became very obvious and people started using it en masse. Later on, Belarusian state started blocking from 2016 Tor network with different success. Of course, like you can't block it with tractors putting it on the road, so you need more sufficient, you know, like or complicated systems. And of course, you can't get them easily in Belarus from the factories that are producing rockets. You can't hit the Tor network with the rocket. So, like, they started searching for those, and you can see that, like, 3 years Belarusian cops were going to security congresses where, like, these private companies were selling their shit to anybody, pretty much. And they were searching for solutions. There were, like, for 2014, I think there was a hacking team, Italian hacking team leak, where we figure out that Belarusian state was trying to buy something from Italians and stuff like that, right? So at the end of the day, they got some stuff in 2016 and slowly started applying more and more censorship on the internet. Anarchist websites, oppositional websites started getting blocked. In 2020, this system like exploded en masse. So we have like hundreds and hundreds of the websites. Some of them like, you know, Islamist shit and stuff like that. But some of them are legit oppositional anarchists and stuff like that that are blocked and you can't access them through like a normal network. Yeah. And right now, because Belarusian state was under attack for quite often from certain groups, a lot of websites, governmental websites, kind of created a whitelisting just for Belarusian IPs, so you can't go to the Belarusian state websites from outside. So a lot of people paradoxically left the country, live in exile, but use Belarusian VPN to know if they're included in extremist or terrorist lists. Yeah, so. One more thing about Belarusian internet and Belarusian like communication infrastructure is SORM. Some of you have heard about it. This is like a saying that was developed for many years, and there are different versions of it. And it's pretty much backdoor, like a legal backdoor to put into the networks of the communication providers. Before it was just a smartphone, it's a cell network. Now it's also internet network and so on, internet providers. You just put a black box and the cops somewhere on the other side of the country can have access to your network directly, and they can see all the what is happening on the network, and they, you know, like clone easily IDs and so on and so forth. So they are like owning pretty much the private networks of the private providers. Also, what is not mentioned on the slides, Belarusian internet is in one way or another is governmental, so you have like one exit for the internet to the outside world, and this is controlled by the state, and all the private companies that are working with the internet are actually like renting internet from the state and then reselling it to the private bidders. Internet censorship. So I was telling you that they were going and buying shit on the market. One of the things that kind of blew out and we figured out in 2020 was this company Sandvine. You might have heard about it. They were selling pretty much the gear, the hardware for censoring traffic in the first days after elections. But the network was set up already for longer, so it was not like Sandvine is rushing into Minsk on the day of elections, but rather this was sold for some years before, and the Belarusian state was successfully using it. And on the day of elections, like we lost internet connection for most of the country, there was also coming a lot of assistance days following that from Russian and Chinese government, who would try to, you know, help to navigate Belarusian government through the fact that they basically shut down not only like a protest infrastructure, but their own infrastructure, because a lot of their own shit was dependent on the internet, and that was one of the reasons why internet was returned to Belarus 3 days later, as a lot of repressive infrastructure was not working for the state. Yeah, so those were very supportive of Belarusian regime, and they're still doing that. But there were some also private companies that were helping Belarus to deal with the protests. Microsoft, I mean, there is a lot of pirated Microsoft installs, but Skype server infrastructure was used for prosecuting protesters. This was very handy, so you would have a court where there will be like just a computer standing, like it's not really technological countries so much, right? So in the court there will be a laptop and there would be like a guy in the mask who would be a witness in the case of the protesters, and it takes around like 2 minutes to prosecute the person, for them to get like 15-25 days in prison. The person leaves and then there is a new case, and quite often there were like the same cops basically testifying for the people on multiple occasions, and this provided a lot of anonymity from one side for the infrastructure of repressions, because the cops didn't have to be at the place and they couldn't be identified. But on the other side, it provided also this kind of like a mobility of repressions. You don't need to bring another cop who would stand there and he doesn't know what to read and to say and so on and so forth. So this was there, and this was like Skype was not in any way, you know, and Microsoft was not in any way reacting how the Belarusian state is using their services in the country at that point. Then we had Synesis. Synesis is like a Belarusian company that was developing a face recognition system and this smart city bullshit and all the crap you can find on the pages of the internet these days. So one of the products they had was Keepoat, and this was basically like a live face recognition system that they installed in Minsk. And this Keepoat was used for identifying also protesters during the protests, and also identifying high target, like high political targets in the city at some point. So, for example, one of the comrades of ours, an anarchist, was arrested through like a common operation of Keepoat that was telling the police that he's there, so they would follow him to the place where he was living, underground, and so on and so forth. So face recognition system worked pretty well in certain situations, right? They were also using like their own face recognition system for post-process, so they get images of high resolution from big crowds, like 100,000 people, and from there they would pick up some faces of the protesters, and this would be like ending up in the court cases of the people. So you would have like a printout from Keepoat system that was saying, okay, we identify this person like this and that. The CEO of the company is like a son of the KGB agent, so they had like a lot of connections with the state. And what else is here? Like the company itself was trying to present itself, oh, we are like an IT company that is doing just a, you know, like a nice thing for everybody and make people happy in Belarus, but reality was different. And we figured that also post factum. I think a month later, there was a bigger article published on what they are doing and how they are basically like helping up the Belarusian state to suppress the uprising. And here we also have a great corporation called Intel that doesn't, you know, for whom money also doesn't smell. It's very funny because Intel was very proud of cooperating with Synesis till 2022, even though Synesis was on under sanctions. In the European Union by that time, but US was not sanctioning. So when the full-scale war in Ukraine broke out, Synesis ended up on US sanction list. So Intel was like, okay, this is not good imagery for us. So they deleted the Keepoat page from their website, where they were very proud of it. But if you search Keepoat Intel, you still find a Chinese page, like a page in Chinese on the Intel website that still does like all this bullshit advertisement. We are helping human rights and developing technologies and progress and blah, blah, blah. So Intel is still partly proud of cooperating with a repressive organization in Belarus, but only for the Chinese market, most probably. Social networks. So there is like a certain, you know, a hype around that Telegram was used a lot to coordinate protests and so on and so forth. But reality, I mean, and it was. But reality, the other side of the coin was that we ended up in quite a shitstorm because people could be identified through the Telegram, or the way Telegram is built, through IDs, like the unique IDs that are, doesn't matter if you change the phone number and so on and so forth. So a lot of people ended up being prosecuted because they did some shit on Telegram. And in like the further we went after repressions of the uprising, the more ridiculous those could be. Like even putting, you know, a shit emoji under information that a KGB agent was shot during a raid would be enough to start criminal prosecution against you. So those things became very problematic, and at the end of the day, we've seen that Belarusian state is observing not only Telegram, but also other social networks. Telegram at that point was not really cooperative with Belarusian state, and they were still selling, like Durov was still selling this, you know, image of we are like for the human rights and for people and all this bullshit. But by the time, like a year later, we ended up with a situation when the protests like died out, that Durov started blocking, like Telegram started blocking certain websites, certain channels in Telegram that were, for example, doxing police or documenting police violence and court cases and so on and so forth. So those channels are, for example, like there is a channel that is called Belarusian Punishers that has a list of police officers who were responsible for the violence, and this is blocked on Telegram and you can't find it. Official point of like Telegram, this is not us saying, they said, okay, Apple actually forced us to do that, but reality is that it goes both ways. You know, like you have to cooperate with each other for this to happen, and this was happening on one side. On the other side, Telegram was blocking also channels of the same people, the same kind of groups in Russia that were also de-doxing cops who were using violence and who were participating in repressions even after the full-scale invasion. So we see a lot of censorship and a lot of cooperation happening after like the protests. So during the active phase, like they would be like, yeah, we are standing with you and you're almost won, so we would like to be with you. But when, you know, they see that the status quo is maintained, they start cooperating, they start like following the laws of the country, even if those laws are oppressive or doesn't make any fucking sense and so on and so forth. Yeah, and ВКонтакте, I think you know, this is like a social network in Russia. They are like completely working with FSB and shit, and Belarusian state also has pretty much direct access on what you're doing there. There were some people organizing, but for even like normal people, it became clear that like don't use Russian social networks. This is like a bad idea. And then apparently you shouldn't use Chinese social networks, and maybe don't use social networks in general, because a lot of them have like a potential of repressions of not only individuals, but the social movements and shit like that. Mobile phones and data collection. So what did we figure out during the protests and in the last years? Celebrite, of course, they are fucking happy to sell themselves to any repressive regime. So Belarus is not an exception, and they were used, they're still used. So Belarusian state is still buying Celebrite licenses through some third party companies. And I mean, sanctions is a fucking joke in general. And even the companies who are saying we're not doing that, in most cases, they are doing that, but through the third party. Data dumps, so through Celebrite, but through other certain other companies, you just get like a set of phones, right? And I don't know, there would be like 500 people detained, there would be all the phones confiscated, and the cops would be dumping all the data from those phones, and then, you know, like they wouldn't have a time to go through this data at the point, but then you might be prosecuted in half a year later for what they found from those phones. And also, you know, like there is a lot of discussions during the Congress as well, and in general in the security community, the strong passwords, you know, encryption is very important, but we figured out that, you know, encryption works very bad if they're torturing you, and that was the Belarusian, like, way to break encryption. They didn't try to, you know, make a technological way into this, but rather they fucked you up to the point where you decide, okay, I whether die or I give them the password, and quite often it worked pretty well, and it worked also in the way, like not retrospectively, but in a threaten way. So you know, okay, some people were tortured to get access to the encrypted drives, and other people would be like, okay, I give you the password without torture. So encryption doesn't work against torture in Belarusian state and in many other cases. And this is, it doesn't matter how perfect your security system built technologically wise, quite often the human factor is still the weakest link in the whole situation. Then we had situations where the cops were impersonating activists up to the point where they were registering, like for example, on the dating apps and putting like naked pictures that they would get from the data dumps and so on. And then people would be calling those activists, hooking up with them, and so on and so forth. SIM cloning, that's a huge thing that I think people should fucking like get engraved in their like brain, that your phone and the SIM cards that you get do not belong to you. You are like borrowing them from the companies, and quite often if the companies have, or the state has access to the companies, then the state owns those, and that means the state owns your fucking phone number, and that means phone number is not your unique identification. So we had a lot of situations where Telegram accounts were hijacked by the state just by, you know, like cloning the SIM card and getting all the access. And normal person wouldn't put a password on your Telegram, account. So be aware of that, and please, like, stop using that for your you know, technological things you're doing or software that you're developing. This is not a secure way in any way. This also goes to Signal people. Traffic analysis, yeah, as I was mentioning, like the fucking swarm is there, so they're trying to identify what people are doing, and this might be also a reason for a house raid or something like that if your traffic looks suspicious. Resistance. So resistance, unfortunately, is very low technologically speaking. So there's not so much of like, you know, laser rifles and shit like that. But rather, and that's like, unfortunately, the story of resistance against authoritarian regimes, that normally, even when the state has like very sophisticated heat guns and shit like that, people end up on the streets with the stones and sticks, and that was the case also in Belarus. However, people started learning technologies very fast, so there were a lot of people who learned how to use Toxis, Tor, VPN. You see how the whole usage of those services spiked during the protests, and this is not like, you know, your 20, 30-year-old friends, but rather like older people, 50, 60, who were forced into doing that because they are interested in joining the protests. So to be part of the protests, you actually have to learn how to do those. We also figured out that mesh networks, although it's such a great idea, and maybe one day on the other planet it will work out, but for your average protester and average participant in like an anti-authoritarian uprising, this is not the case. You can't fucking get them working, and people are not really capable of using them. Destruction of surveillance property, so there were people who would just go around and smash the fucking cameras. That was the way to resist the facial recognition system. Hacking of infrastructure, so there were a lot of different attempts, and the biggest one, I think, was hacking into the ID database, which brought like a lot of other stuff. So there are databases of all these Belarusian citizens, their criminal records and shit like that available to certain groups right now, and this gives also opportunity to look into police activity and what the cops are doing, what they own, where they work, and so on and so forth. The doxing of the police officers and regime functionaries like the judges and other bureaucrats. Basically, as I was mentioning, like on Telegram, you have this whole list, like thousands and tens of thousands of people. There is also a map, so you can have a look if you're living next to a fucker in your house who is like a colonel of repression apparatus or something like that. So this is also helping a lot, but it also built up a lot of pressure on the police, because police apparently think if you know the address of the police officer, most probably you will go and smash his fucking house and kill everybody and so on, which didn't happen, but it did provide a certain pressure on the repression apparatus. We also ended up with the solution for, like, what do you do when the cops torture you for your password, for encrypted hard drive? You break your hard drive. And sometimes maybe you wouldn't be able to break your hard drive, so you do like this thing that they do in the movies, you know, in US, you break the screen. Really bizarre, right? But it works. The point here, and I'm not talking about the laptop, the point here is you have a smartphone and there you have something going on. So if you smash it, the average riot cop guy doesn't know what to do with it. So he can't torture you to open it, right? It doesn't work. And that was like a solution for a lot of activists. So basically, if you are in the danger of being arrested, you just break the phone and you have this buffer time when the cops arrest you, put you in jail, and blah, blah, blah. And this expert comes who knows how to, you know, open the phone that has a broken screen. And that's kind of like a place where most of the torture happens, so you're capable of avoiding. And the cops also figured out that pretty fast, so they started trying to get you arrested before you break that. And I have a story like of a friend who, you know, like who was laying on the ground and he was putting his hand in the pocket and like smashing the screen, and he did it. And the cops were like, how did you do that? We were formed sitting on you and you couldn't fucking move. So this kind of things and this kind of things, I think, saved at least a health of certain people. And also there was a lot of online education where there were like workshops for the people how to figure out their smartphone security, their Telegram security, and shit like that. This is one of the examples of online education that is not connected to the security of the smartphones. It is more about production of new technologies, right, in Belarus, not connected to tractors. And those are like just to immobilize the police vans. So this was a lot of this kind of online education as well. The interesting fact, again, that a lot of people were afraid to do that online education because eventually on many social networks you can get banned for that. Like if you put, a video how to make Molotov cocktail, this is considered illegal activity. And you know, you can, like, your account can be banned and shit like that. And I think people in, not in the First World War, figured that out a lot. Like, people who are in Palestine and in many other places figured that, you know, the repressions are working from the private companies against them when they're fighting against the regimes. Conclusions. So this is a small sticker that says, if you can't break the dictatorship, you can still burn it down. Conclusions are very short. There is a lot to talk about. Capitalism is fucking evil. I mean, hundreds of years of this fucked up story. I hope all of you figured this out. This is not really a fucking mystery. You know, you don't have to come from USSR indoctrinated by Marxism, Leninism to know that capitalism is evil. And capitalism... And capitalism destroys lives not only here, you know, like in Germany, in US or whatever, and your political life, but it destroys lives everywhere. In Belarus, Myanmar, Hong Kong, Syria, like the fucking corporations and the fucking private business is ready to sell anything, even their fucking mothers and brothers and sisters to the dictators just to make money. Your phone number is not a good ID, it's a bad ID, don't fucking use it ever, because it can be easily identified in Germany as well, in many other countries. It is like, it's a fucking, like, if giving a passport. Just, when you are registering with your phone number, just imagine that you're giving a passport to some company, right? Yeah. Password is a good thing, still, many years after. You can also forget it, you get a concussion, you forget it, you get tortured, you forget it. Password is good, right? Surveillance is good for the state, bad for society. So all those corporations that are selling right now, also in Western world, the business of surveillance, they are destroying the social glue of the society. And this is like a different topic, but in general, like, surveillance is destructive for us as a humankind. Western private companies are crucial for the dictatorship. We are not living in the world where, you know, like, the dictators have horses and they're riding them into the crowd and, like, hooray, but rather a lot of technologies that are used by the state, by the Belarusian state, but also by Syrian state, by Russian state, are not the technologies that were developed within the small states by the local companies, but rather a lot of technologies that were brought in and developed in these countries where we are sitting, you know? And they were developed under certain freedom, but at the same time, they are now used to engrave the dictatorship, and those dictatorships are spreading. Like, Russia wants to fucking conquer half of the Europe. So you have to be aware of that, and you have to, like, we have to fight that back. This is not, you know, whether it is should be done or not. It is more like how much energy and how fucking your ass should be on fire to fight those. Smart also doesn't mean smart. And by that, I mean that a lot of engineers believe that they, you know, they can open a fucking Wikipedia page so they know everything about the world. But it is not the case. A lot of engineers fail miserably in understanding how the world is working, how the society is working. So if we develop technological solutions to certain problems, we do have to work with sociologists, political scientists, with activists to understand how those technologies will influence the world, you know? The time is fucking running out, and I'm not talking about only about ecological catastrophe, but also technologically speaking. We are in the race with the dictators and authoritarian regimes who want to enforce and make their regimes stronger through technologies, face recognition systems, and all this shit that is making the state way stronger against the society. So, get your shit done and get your shit like going already now, today, you know? And digital resistance is part of a broader uprising, so do not see yourself, you know, as a hackers community that exists in isolated world and you're in a bubble and shit like that, but rather if we want to stop like technological dictatorships or whatever shit you can imagine, we actually have to work together. Technological activists, street activists, community organizers, all of those get together and fight against the dictatorships, fight against the authoritarian attacks on us, on our society, on our families, on our friends, and only then we can win. Thank you. And don't forget to donate to our group. We are not like getting money for ourselves, we're collecting money for the political prisoners, so don't forget to do that. This is an important part of just supporting the struggle. Yeah.
So... so, we have a couple of minutes for questions, but if you have to leave, leave super quietly. And also, a question is a short sentence with a question mark behind it, not a long essay. I have ChatGPT for that. And we have a question from the Signal Angel. By the way, the microphones are up front here. Here, 1, 2, 3, 4. That's where you have to stand in order to do a question. Signal Angel, go ahead.
Yes, the internet wants to know what you expect Microsoft or Skype to do. For example, blocking Belarus as a whole, or wouldn't that also negatively impact the activists? What's your opinion on that?
I mean, I don't think that blocking Skype, like, or Skype stopping providing services in Belarus would negatively affect activist scene. Nobody in activist scene was using Skype, right? On the other side, like, you do have mechanisms of blacklisting court IPs at least, you know, like, this is, Belarusian state is not, you know, super sophisticated going to connect to the fucking VPN and shit like that, but rather you block those and the court is already not doing that. The thing with the Microsoft and Skype is that it's story of the past, because right now they switched to Viber, so, like, This is gone. Like, they did their part, and nobody will most probably remember that. And I mean, honestly, fuck Microsoft. So, yeah.
So, we're running out of time. Question for number three.
Okay, I have a question. How much would a better and more secure VPN technology and better anonymizing systems help in these kinds of situations? And what has the Belarusian state done against using VPS into foreign countries?
I mean, in the first days of the protests, in the first days of the uprising, the whole internet infrastructure was gone. Like, there were certain ways to go around the blocking that were connected with Telegram proxies. I have no fucking clue how they managed to do it successfully, but they did. And in general, like, the internet was just not working. So it doesn't matter if you have VPN or Tor, the internet doesn't work. And later on, when they unlocked the internet, they were very slow in reacting to the fast protest community. So in those cases, VPNs, very important somehow. But for us, at that point, the local organizing and providing infrastructure for the local organizers was way more important. So also like building decentralized networks inside of the country sometimes is way more crucial to the protests than getting out to the services that are outside of the country. And that's what was happening as well. But in general, like it's still part, an important part of fighting back, like having a reliable VPN or any other anonymizing and like censorship circumcising technologies. So how to develop those more successfully, I have no fucking clue, honestly. Because those, like the fight against those are going on very fast, and I can't answer this, I'm very sorry.
So we might be able to squeeze in another two questions. Very briefly, on number one.
How bad is the suppression of the APC Belarus activists, and can you safely reside inside Belarus without getting arrested immediately, or do you have to flee into exile?
Like in general, not talking only about us, but the bigger political spectrum of all the groups that are providing solidarity work, all of them are gone, like from Belarus. So all of the activists from liberal, also human rights defending groups and so on, had to leave. And if you would be identified as a member of such a group inside of the country, this would be enough to prosecute you and to put, I mean, any case they want on you. This is not a, you know, like a legal state, but rather they prosecute you and that's it. And with the case of activists, anarchist activists in general, there are laws that would allow them to make a group extremist organization that doesn't need a court decision. And through that, you can get like 5, 6, 7 years in prison easily without any other actions, you know. And this is happening to certain solidarity groups already. Yeah. So we also have tomorrow in like a self-organized sessions, a bigger presentation, another comrade will be doing that, about repressions in Belarus, about the political situation, less like focused on technologies, more focused on social political situation. So if you wanna know a little bit more about that, you can come there and ask your questions and shit like that.
I would suggest that for anybody in the room, but we will take one last question very briefly from the Signal Angel, and then we'll have to call it quits, unfortunately.
There's another question regarding the use of encryption. It is if steganography is used with encryption or instead of encryption in Belarus by activists.
I mean, we do not have so many people who were like technologically savvy and were participating in the protests. That's why nobody was hiding messages like that, but we did have like a collective, for example, that developed a Telegram app that would have like a double, I don't know how it's in English, like a double something, double, like basically you have two accounts in the Telegram, and one of those accounts like is a very nice fluffy, you don't do anything, and that's where what the cops see, and then you need to put a password to get another one. So we got like this kind of hiding your activity on the internet, but this was I think like the biggest people can imagine using on their smartphones. In general, like we have to understand that technological savvy is dropping, right? When people are using smartphones, they know less about technologies than they did like 10 years ago. So people are capable of doing less and less and less. Yeah.
So that's all the questions we can take. Please help me thank him for this wonderful talk. Something we never would have seen.
And thanks for doing it.